Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Oh, we're live. Here we are. It's welcome to Taking Stock on what day is it? It's the 13th of July, 2023, and it's a Thursday, of course. John's back. Welcome back, John.
Thanks, Justin. How's it been?
Do you know what? It's really odd. Monday and Tuesday is like I had no one to talk to. And it's almost like just trying to talk and have no one else to come back at me, you know, just give some feedback. So very odd. Then yesterday, I sort of got into the rhythm of it. But now I get back out of that rhythm because you're back here now. You can talk to me, which is nice.
Yeah.
By the way, if you are watching this live, you can post some comments on the sort of YouTube side there, because it's live on YouTube. And of course, yeah, the recording will be on the website afterwards. But by all means, if you have any questions or you have any stocks that you would look at, anything at all, you know, let us know right there in the chat function. And also, by the way, I think to be able to do that, you may need to subscribe or follow us on YouTube. So in fact, hit that anyway, because there's always good content going up on that channel. So hit that, subscribe, follow, all that, like stuff. So first and foremost, John, let's go to the front page of Vox and see what content's been put. Take us through the content on Vox today, John. What's happening there?
Well, the markets are very quiet at the moment, so you know it's not the busiest time of the year. We've had a look at Avink Trans. Paul Hill's had a look at Avink Trans, which is a specialist engineer, which has done very well in nuclear projects. It's nuclear is a very important component of the energy transition, and Avink Trans is right in the sweet spot of that. So, doing very, very well.
Before you go on to that, Avink Trans, I just chatted with Paul, by the way, once every 2 weeks, we just talk about stocks, and he did cover that. So that will be up on the website later as well. So go Fintel. You're doing a bit of a video interview with Fintel, yeah?
Yeah, so they've launched this. So I think Fintel is a fintech business, by its very nature. So it basically provides all of the sort of back end that IFAs need, and also what the asset management industry needs to create products. So this is a fantastically sort of data driven business, lots of tech sitting behind it, built this up over many years, and it's launched something else called Fintel Labs. It's basically an incubator, through which it will invest in other innovative fintech providers. And we spoke to both Matt Timmins, the chief exec, and Gareth Thompson, who is the founder of a company called Planner, which is a very sophisticated CRM system for the retail financial services advisory industry, which is Fintel's first investment. Absolutely fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. Yeah. This is, I find this very strange that this is a company that is leading the charge. One of the few ways that you can get really good exposure to fintech, through the listed markets. And it just seems strange that people sort of haven't woken up to it. And have a listen to this interview, because you can really hear, exactly why this is a tech company in the sweet spot of financial services.
Yeah, no, I like, the guys there. Because I was chatting to Matt a while back, actually, and he is the founder, isn't he, of Fintel, I think, or he's got a decent amount of chunk of stock, you know. And I always like that when you get to the owner, founder, whatever, or been there for since the start, or relatively since the start, and they own a decent chunk of stock. They are motivated. They have a passion for the business. And yeah, definitely do some research on Fintel. It's worth looking at.
Great company. Really good management team there, including Matt, you just mentioned. Really, really, really good.
Yeah. Now, largely on this taking stock, we do focus on these three sections here. It's always worth checking out. Why most followed? Because you find that's the level of interest from the public in these companies. If they're Destiny Pharma, which I own, I'm a bit biased towards, but that's been up there for quite a few days. Ondo's been there for quite a few days as well, but HPV is a new one. But we're looking at these three sections here. Most read, winners and losers. In fact, I covered, we're not going to be covering Finu today, John, but
no, there's a story.
You were away yesterday, I did cover that. And essentially, you know, it is like the bear market problem. When you're a startup and you need new money, and you know, you have to raise money all the time, that's ideal in a bull market. You know, when it comes to a bear market situation, a lot of these companies can come unstuck because, you know, everything's gone up in cost, people don't want to loan money, they're risk averse, and so their plans, their best laid plans, go to ruin almost. And they've now retracted their banking license application. They're trying to sort of wind back the costs to a skeleton operation. I don't know how long it's going to last. I think they've got 4 million of cash there. But it doesn't look rosy.
I had a look at this yesterday before I headed into London. It's unfortunate. I mean, again, you know, just on the subject of fintech, this is a fintech company. We've talked about it before, in fact. Last week, it provides, or was in the process of building something called a plug-in overdraft. Market forces have just caught up with it. It can't raise the money. It's a tough old market out there for non-profitable companies. Really quite horrendous. I think it's probably down about, what is it down? It's 70-odd% in a couple of days. I mean, it's a real wipeout.
Yeah, well, let's look at the... they managed to get a good ticker, though. That's the chart there. I mean, look at that. It launched sort of 18 pence pretty much. It's now 1.95, so almost 80-90% down, and yet the gap down to 70%. So it's there'll be some people jumping in there for that falling knife trade, hoping for a bounce back. Because essentially now they're pretty much priced to go bust. I think they've got about 4 million in cash or something like that.
But if they've got cash and they're not spending it because they've, you know, withdrawn their banking application, and then, you know, it sounds to me like they're really not pressing forward with this project at all. You know, they were talking about reducing staffing levels and, you know, this sort of orderly wind down that's going to take place over time. You know, I mean, I don't see what there is to buy here now.
There is that. I mean, I'm not into this, but there is that kind of near death, edge of the cliff kind of trade where you get any good news coming out. Now, it's a gamble, you know, but you get any good news coming out from this company and it will likely rally very strongly, probably not back to the 6 pence where it was before it closed, but there may be a 50-100% gain here somewhere. If they come out with, you know, fundings, we've secured funding in some way, then there is a trade. But again, that it's a gamble. It's odds against gamble, I'd say. So be careful of that. But there we are. So as far as most followed, Destiny Pharma again. I mean, if you're not aware of this company, they have two sort of lead assets, the phase two and phase three. They partnered on one based on that partnership on the first asset, brokers are seeing an upside of like 900%. Now, if they get a deal on the second asset, which is bigger, has a sort of market potential of around 2 billion, the target price goes up even further. So it goes up from 900% to more than double that. So I don't know a company on AIM where three separate brokers have a price target that big and is likely to get bigger. And there has been a bit of, the share price is not performing because the CEO stepped down, interim CEO came in, more experienced than the previous CEO, but they are seeming to stick that plan that it will get a deal done on XF73, which is infection prevention sort of drugs, before the end of 2023. So it hasn't been an easy ride for me, but you know, I still have belief in the products. Look at reading through this, sort of the broker notes and the data they've got from phase two, it seems very good.
Plenty of cash left as well.
Yeah, exactly. You have like 10 million in cash. He's like, HVivo, you know a lot about that company, John. You interviewed Mo Khan. For people not familiar with them, just give us a summary of what they do, HVivo.
Yeah, so they're basically contract research, and they make these things, or they build these things called human challenge models. Mainly around it's almost entirely around infectious diseases. They essentially are building profiles of diseases by testing them on, you know, very controlled cohort of volunteers. They've got a facility in Whitechapel where they do this. You can have a look on their website, so, you know, see the thing. Basically, these models then help drug developers to accelerate the research process. So you've got a much more controlled way of testing new drugs, new treatments, antivirals, vaccines for infectious diseases. It's almost a blueprint for diseases, and they're amazing. So actually, Poolbeg, who's a sort of sister company of hVIVO, uses their human challenge models in its own research. And actually, what Poolbeg did recently was use this human challenge model and then analyze the data with artificial intelligence through one of its partners to really sort of test some of its sort of assumptions behind its drug development program. It's a fantastic business. You know, it's sort of really, really growing quickly. You know, picked up some wins in Asia recently for the first time, which is significant because that's where a lot of the sort of drug development, you know, activity is moving. Got a lot of cash on the balance sheet, sort of really sort of moving very close to profitability. Almost certainly going to accelerate from here with a massive order book as well. You know, drug developers, very large pharmaceutical companies are realizing the benefits of this approach. You know, it's no longer the sort of hit and miss drug development of old. This really allows, you know, pharmaceutical and biopharma companies to target how they develop a drug. Fantastic company.
That's all right. Yours is in Destiny Farm, which is most followed. And second most, we're not manipulating the system here, people.
I'm going to be very open about it. I like this company, and I own some shares.
Well, you know, just look at the chart here. Excellent rise, of course, in the bull market, 2019, up to 47 pence, top peak of the bull market price. And it's come down. Now, look, pay attention to the 200-day moving average. It's the red line here. And they often say it's the major sort of bull bear line. So a share price is above that, and it's good. If it's below that, it's not. As you see, it dipped below that in July 2021, which is almost towards the end of the bull market. And it's come down. It hasn't managed to get above that until recently, which is, November, just last year, peaked above that. Big rally. Sometimes, you know, people take profit, it comes back down. Then it got above there again, gapped up above that. And so you can see almost that's the change of the trend from there to there. And even now, it's had a big rally come back, but it's still bouncing off the 20-day moving average, which is a good sign. And now it's also gone above the 50-day moving average, shorter, which is quite a good sign. So you can have a bit of volatility. When you have a strong rally, you get people to take profit and some of that. So sometimes you prefer a gentle sort of rise rather than a breakneck rise because people tend to take profit then. But it's looking good there. And the third most followed, it's been followed for a long time. This is a chart that astounds me. It's Ondo. Now, I like the tech, but I won't get into this company because I know, I'm pretty much hands-on, they will need to raise money at some point. I don't know where that's going to be, but judging by their last set of results, £1 million for H1, they burned about £2 million, they had about 1.8 left. So we're now almost towards we are at the end of their full year, the reporting period for full year. I'm assuming they burned more in H2 because they've had more contracts. And not many people realize this, John, do they? When people get new contracts, they just believe, it's new money coming in.
Yeah.
To expand and produce more of these LeakBot things, which they have, then you have to, you know, spend more as well. So I'm assuming the spend has gone up in the second half, which would be more than 2 million. So I'm assuming they've burned about 4 million, maybe more than that in the 12 months, and yet they had 1.8 in cash left. So I'm waiting for a fundraise here. I don't know how we know it's not easy for companies to get money, equity fundraisers away, but hopefully now, because they've had a bit of liquidity in the share price, it won't be at a discount. But I don't know when that's going to happen. But
I think, you know, when a company's, you know, clearly winning new contracts,
yeah,
and needs to raise money to fulfill those orders, and, you know, it already has a proven technology, you know, decent order book, really, really good, you know, client roster, then I don't think it will have trouble raising money. And, you know, we have seen, you know, although, you know, certain companies are finding it difficult to get placings, you know, open offers away, we have seen some companies doing, you know, some really quite, you know, decent fundraisings, you know, not far, you know, either not much of a discount or even at a premium. God, who did we talk about the other day?
Well, Coutts, the only companies I know on the AIM market at a premium, there's a £2.60 the share price. Well, they raise it, was it 10 million at £3 or something like that. But even though I own a true fin, but it all comes down to the shareholders. If the shareholders are institutions and they're backing the company, then it's a lot easier to get, because all they have to do is like having, you know, almost like if you're a business and you have recurring customers, it's a lot easier to sell to them than going out and making cold calls to new customers. If you've got a share base that's institutions, they've got deep pockets and they like your business, it's quite easy to say five or six of those, how about putting £500,000 each or £1 million each? And then that kind of momentum then garners attraction for more institutions. So Truefin did that recently. They raised about £8 million, but they've got, you know, a stack load of institutional investors on there. They just went to them basically, and they also did an open offer. But but there are certain companies, unless you've got, you know, institutional backing there, you find it quite difficult, I think, to get, but hopefully they'll do well. It's a good bit of tech that it was bought from HomeServe, spun out from HomeServe.
Well, it's funny. I was just looking at the shareholder base. HomeServe owns 18% of it.
Yeah, they also got 6.7 million of loan notes, I think, in there already. So
So, I mean, you know, I think it's quite interesting, you know, that it's a spin out, that HomeServe still has a stake in this. You know, this is important technology.
Yeah, yeah. Talk about technology,
that's a big problem.
It is massive. And that's to say, you know, I didn't realize that, but, you know, leaks account for 70%, I think it was. Oh, no, a huge amount of claims. I got the 77 somewhere else. But most read RNSs, this is when we send out the RNSs, what is attracting the eyes of the public there, the users there. And this today is Powerhouse Energy. I did own shares in this. I got out and it pretty much 10 bagged. So I'll show you it on the chart. It was so annoying because I really liked it, and I thought, I love the technology behind this because I love the technology behind this because essentially what they were doing was getting waste that no one wants and turning it into clean energy. And I thought, well, that's alchemy, essentially, you know, churning rubbish. And look at this. I held this for like, it must have been, and I kept banging on about it, saying, this is like alchemy. And I held it along this area here. And literally, in the end, I think it started to dip down. I got really impatient with it. And it went from 3 pence up there, look at that, 10 bagged.
There's a lesson for you, Justin.
I didn't know. In fact, more than 10 bagged. It went from 3 to, and so literally just annoyed the heck out of me. But since then, it's been coming back. And look, you see, it's gone back to where it was. Even before, I don't know, it's back to where it was when I held, pretty much. But they've announced a European patent application allowed. This is not granted, but it's allowed. And so it's the way, what is it? Is it the method and apparatus for the treatment of waste material? Like I said, it's quite a cutting-edge tech, and it's been around for a while now. And it's been, whenever you get something like this cutting-edge, it does take longer to develop and commercialize than you think. And along that way, there's been some massive spikes and some massive drawdowns. But they're going to move on now to hopefully getting patent protection. Are you aware of Powerhouse Energy at all, John?
Only at a very high level. I mean, you know, I'm aware of the sector. You know, waste to energy. It's kind of reasonly well established, and what I'd want to know is what's it doing differently?
Well, they produce a clean gas, a syngas, it's called, and so they can take tyres, all stuff of that. So waste to energy is, isn't it? But what do they do that's different? I don't know actually. But wasn't it just like so? Currently, waste to energy. What kind of waste do they use? All kinds of waste, is it?
Well, they say non-recyclable, and you know, but you know, anything. A lot of the incinerators that you produce waste from now, essentially just burning non-recyclable waste. You know, whether it be plastic bottles or whatever. I'd want to know more about the tech.
Yeah, theirs was a modular sort of approach. So literally, it was a container. You know, sort of containers you have, and you can stack them. Mm. So they were a lot smaller operations, and so you could put them on site at local sort of, you know, waste places or tips or you know, where you go and dump all your.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So they could put them there, and they could generate gas from that hydrogen. Basically, it could be, and you could put that into trucks then, and the trucks could fuel the trucks. So it was like that. It was a good idea, sort of thing, but. just look at
it. Sounds great, yeah. I mean, it sounds ideal. You know, this is sort of on-site generation is where a lot of things, yeah. a lot of industry is heading, you know, and the energy crisis really accelerated that. So, you know, if it has a solution to on-site generation, then, you know, then that's a great thing. Not much in the way of revenues at the moment, I would say, though.
No, cash in the bank, 5.8, it's 31st of December, cash in the bank at 5.8 million. They made a loss, operating loss of 2 million, but the operating loss post-exceptional items was 46 million because this included goodwill impairment of 40 million, but it's not a cash charge, of course. But their market cap is 17 million.
Yeah.
Okay. Winners and losers, though. Let's go to the front page here because there are a couple of winners and losers, but some of them are not based on news here. Predator Oil and Gas is the winner today, and we're coming to some news on that. But it's up, 38%. And they've announced an MOU update.
Morocco,
where they are, yeah. I did put in here that they're basically MOU update with results of new tech petrophysical analysis. And they say, Hollis, 64 meters of likely gas sands interpreted by new tech and MO4, likely gas reservoir. I think they have to put, the Nomad has told them they have to put likely in there. A likely gas reservoir atop a Jurassic carbonate. Rigorous testing program will now include Jurassic, significant Jurassic gas potential if rigorous testing is successful. Now, I did put a definition in here is what rigorous is. So it's a well intervention operation conducted with equipment and support facilities that preclude the requirement for a rig over the well bore. Coil tubing, slickline, and snubbing activities are commonly conducted as
well. I'm sure that means something to someone, but it doesn't mean a great deal to me, yeah, I'm afraid. It's not my area of expertise.
Exactly. I'm not an oil and gas man. There are some private investors out there. They're phenomenal. They follow these companies and they know so much about them. It is, and that's why I like investing in it, because when you sort of researching a company, you start to learn about the industry and all the terminology that goes with it. And it's like that Zulu principle.
Jim Slater.
Yeah.
Jim Slater.
Zulu principle about his wife, apparently. You can become an expert. If you do it intense learning, you can within a matter of weeks, you know, and you can know a lot more than the actual layperson just by researching something. You can become an expert, and you that's the love of being an investor, I think.
It takes a lot of time, you know, and it's, I've always said, you know, said like the best way to invest is to do a lot of research, you know, spend a significant amount of time, you know, understanding what you're investing in. I think, you know, there is a tendency for sort of snap decision making when it comes to buying and selling shares. I would always encourage, you know, do your own research, I think is the popularly used phrase. I mean, oil and gas is fascinating. I you know, not being from within the industry, not being somebody who is particularly keen to invest in you know, high risk exploration, even though it comes with big rewards if you get it right. You know, I've met lots of people, and in fact, lots of people from, you know, former rig workers, or whatever, from within the industry that do very well out of oil and gas shares.
They know
what to look for.
Yeah, exactly. And I've come across on Twitter some rig workers are really into that. And that's it. You know your industry, know your sector, know your area of competence, as Buffett says. So losers, by the way, Myanmar investments. That sounds risky to me already, but there's no news on that. But the biggest fallers. But
I've never heard of it, I have to admit.
No, me. So, but graph. Sorry, losers. I'm going to say not winners. So the other ones just for news out today. We've covered Fintu. I don't know if there's anything on Mosman. That's a favourite by share placement. See, is that today 13th? Yes, it is. So it's obviously a discount. How much did they raise?
We can
see. That's the thing, you see. We're talking about raising money here. So
300,000.
300 grand. How far is that going to get them?
Not very
far. No. The biggest loser on sort of strategic down, but Aptitude Software Group. Are you aware of these? They are a sort of small cap, pretty much, 159. But they do say here, despite macro headwinds, they say that a lot. And they do say there's a lot of churn going on there. And they say, with this macroeconomic backdrop, present near-term challenge for Aptitude's heritage products. So the cycles have lengthened. The board are confident, though, of a cry of a greater efficiency. But then down here, board changes. And this has also probably kicked the share price down a bit. That Jeremy Sudard's chief executive officer will be stepping down as chief executive officer. Well, I assume he would be, because he's chief executive officer. How can he be a chief executive officer and stand down to something else? But But he's been there for 2 years. Obviously, they're not impressed with him.
I don't know how much you can read into that. People, you know, balls churn quite quickly these days.
Yeah,
you know,
the
average time in a hot seat is a lot shorter than it was in the past.
It's like football managers. Ruthless. It's ruthless sometimes. You just get rid of it. Share price, not for money. And it's some kind of aptitude. What is the ticket? APTD. Let's see if the share price has performed. If it has, then why is it being kicked out? Oh, there we are. It's not really performed. We've seen a big drawdown there from, in fact, his tenure was coming in, was been a bit volatile since he came in 2019. You can't blame him for that. That's the COVID dash for crash there. So climb back up, double top to 720 on this half pretty much. And today it's also going down for further. So it's now down pretty much at the COVID dash for cash crash. So there we are. But you don't want to avail
of warming. I don't think, you know, you can point the finger at any one company at the moment with a chart like that. So, you know, you're performing badly. We are in very difficult market territory, you know, very difficult economic territory. This is, you know, I mean, it's what do they say? It does this sort of, you know, enterprise software for managing sort of finance departments and subscription management software. You know, we know that, you know, tech, despite what we saw during the COVID boom, you know, where everything tech was gold dust, you know, tech is cyclical and people forget this. You know, companies spend a lot of money on technology, and when the purse strings are tight, they try and cut a little bit of fat out of their tech budgets. And you know, this is exactly what's happening here. You know, it's not shrinking. I mean, it's still growing. Mm-hmm. It's just not growing as quickly as perhaps, you know, hype would have suggested anything tech would grow. So yeah, I mean, I again, you know, profitable. Is it in bargain territory? You got to wonder.
Yeah, well, that's what you do your research on, I suppose.
But, exactly.
Okay. Well, let's finish off on three top business stories. Look at the GDP out today. The UK economy contracted in May as it continued to perform sluggishly, they say. Shrank by 0.1%, partly down to extra bank holiday. Yeah, I blame the king as well.
Blame it for everything.
Yeah. But let's be honest, you can't blame that on the last 50. I looked at the last 15 months, okay? And basically, and also, by the way, this is down minus 1%. There were no strikes in May. I didn't know that. So it's down. So we are going to have strikes this month. And so this could maybe not get any better. It could get worse. But construction's looking even worse. I mean, it's literally, if you see they missed estimates, this is construction output for the year and year to May, they forecast 0.8%. It came in as 0.2%. Now, this is previous, it was 2.7%. So, on a tenth of the previous month. So, that's a little bit worrying going forward, isn't it?
And not surprising. I mean, it's not surprising. We've talked about it on here. We talked about the house builders. You know, these, I don't know who's put these forecasts out, but they obviously haven't been reading the updates from the house builders because it's just, their forecasts are for massive contraction, contraction. I mean, I really don't find it surprising. One thing I would say is I went into London yesterday. You know, my goodness, the amount of construction going on around the city. Yeah, I mean, it's still booming.
I know. It's like they're always building in London. I thought they're pretty much done by now. You know, there seems enough buildings there. But you know what? Looking at the GDP and whether we're going to recession, right? Last 15 months of GDP, there have been 7 months have been positive, 7 months have been negative, and 1.0. But if you look at Q1 this year, January's 0.1% growth, February minus 0.5%, March 0.4, so that's pretty much equals up for the quarter there. But then the Q2 is looking worse. April, flat, zero. May, minus 0.3. And June, I can't see growing. So, you know, regardless of what the definition of two contracted quarters, we're hardly growing, are we? You know, it's more like
not
contracting
really,
there. No. So it's not...
I was just looking at some of the detail behind the figures. And, you know, as well as construction being tricky, wholesale and retail has dropped quite sharply, as you'd expect, in the middle of a cost of living crisis. Drop in professional, scientific and technical activities, which is a worry for a lot of the sort of UK engineers. It's expanded is arts, entertainment, and recreation. And it does sort of tie into this sort of leisure, you know, the reopening and people desperate to get out and, you know, get to a festival or whatever it might be. You know, that's growing absolutely gangbusters. And in fact, very strangely, when I saw the last inflation figures, a big component of inflation was ticket prices.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, you know, it's everyone wants to go and see Taylor Swift and pay £400 a ticket, basically. Miss Madness.
That's sad, isn't it? But, you know, story number two. Amazing, the markets had a bit of liquidity yesterday, and it wasn't based on anything in this country, based in the US. And US CPI, which is inflation data, core CPI, forecasts come in at 5%, came in at 4.8. Now, previously, it was 5.3. So really are heading in the right direction here. Now, our CPI data is coming out next Wednesday. We're at 8.7. They're literally what, almost half or close to where we are. So hopefully, yeah. But as I said, you know, we have gone through a peak. I think we're in recession territory. I think we're ultimate bear here. We're at the bottom of the market. I think we are at the bottom of the market. When recession is officially announced, the markets rally because the like-for-like figures tend to get better. So I think round about this level, if you're seeing good companies, good valuations, it's maybe time to start you know, investing little bits here and there. That's why.
Definitely look forward. No, I think the US inflation data is interesting, and the comparison with the UK is very interesting. What you've got to remember about the US is that, you know, it is... I mean, not entirely a self-sufficient economy, but it's able to self-sustain. So, you know, a lot of things like energy are a lot, you know, the prices come down much more rapidly in the US than it has here. We are an importer. You know, we import so much of what we consume, whether that's energy or food or retail goods. And, you know, the pound has been weak, which is obviously, you know, hurt inflation. What I would say is the pound has strengthened recently.
Yeah.
So this is potentially good news on the inflation front for the UK.
Yeah, yes, we're importing a bit of deflation. Third one, US regulator, it's funny this because, you know, Microsoft wants to buy Activision Blizzard $69 billion, the biggest gaming deal in history. Now, it was blocked in the US initially. The EU allowed it. The UK blocked it. And then it went to sort of appeal, and a judge this week said, it's okay, we're going to let it go ahead. And then all of a sudden, the Federal Trade Commission, I said, no, an appeal now is going ahead. But in the meantime, before the Federal Trade Commission said, we're going to make a launch an appeal, the UK, who was blamed by Activision of being a country, you know, closed for business and all that stuff. They would say, you're closed for business, you want to let this deal go through, and really come down hard on the CMA. And you do see this to a certain extent. And now the CMA did say, oh, we'll relook at this because the Americans have passed it now. We'll relook at this. But in the meantime, the Federal Trade Commission has made an appeal. So who knows? Do you know what? Part of me says, I don't know. I just let it go ahead. It's just gaming.
it does seem slightly odd that this has garnered so much attention. I mean, you know, it's not like, you know, Tesco buying Sainsbury's where you would have, you know, such a consolidation of power that affects so many people. You know, this is a, you know, it's a big industry, but it's still a somewhat niche industry. And, you know, the fact that you've got these conflicting opinions around the world about you know, whether it's sort of, you know, infringes upon competition in it, in this industry. I mean, it sort of suggests that it's not exactly clear cut whether this is bad for competition or not. And so you know, this seems to be, it's very odd. I really don't understand why this is a story.
Yeah, there are millions of games out there. There are millions of games out there. It's not as if he's going to cut your hand off competition. And also, they've got competition with other big players, haven't they? So it's not as if they're a monopoly, you know. Or going that way. So, just ridiculous.
Yeah.
Okay, let's just quickly look, before we end, just a quick look at the markets. And this is London Stock Exchange there. FTSE's slightly up 0.23%, FTSE 250 a bit less, 350 is same as that.
But,
sorry. And are you there? I lost you. But
no, I lost you. Sorry.
Oh, okay. And the it's all green again, 2 days in a row. Okay, it's not sort of not like yesterday. Yesterday was quite a bit of a rally off those CPI figures from America, but it's still in the positive. So that's good news. It's going in the right direction. Yeah.
And it's as always, when you get a nice green day on the markets, a couple of my big holdings, Unilever and BT, go in the red because everyone starts chasing growth and leaving the value behind. So yeah, it's. Two steps forward, one step back every day.
There we are. And look at that. Follows the footsies, Barrett, Taylor, British American Tobacco. Yeah. So a lot of house builders there.
No surprise. You know, related to GDP data, really no surprise.
Marvel stuff. That's it for today. Speak tomorrow. See you on to tomorrow.
Thanks, Justin. Speak tomorrow.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.